This podcast is featured on the Gun Rights Radio Network, podcasting freedom. You can hear Gun Rights Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones, on demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under sources.
The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud member of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Howdy, folks. Cowboy T back at you. Welcome to Episode 5. Almost a year ago, a bunch of us in the Evil Gun Lobby. Well, according to Sarah Brady and Eric Fast and Furious Holder, anyway, we're the Evil Gun Lobby. We went to a bunch of state universities. Reason we went there? It seems that they all follow Virginia Tech University's lead of what I've come to call victim disarmament. And as Nikki Stallard has correctly pointed out, VD can kill. Seems the administrations of these institutions of higher learning believe that concealed handgun permit holders shouldn't be allowed to exercise their right to keep and bear arms on their campuses. They tried a blanket ban. Well, here in Virginia, they can't do that to the general public, and they didn't like that. But tough cookies, ivory tower folks, the law's the law. Unfortunately, they can make policies that say, students caught carrying anywhere on campus, we can't have you arrested. No, but we can and will kick you out of our university. And that's bad news if you want to graduate from that school. Well, they also, worse yet, can make policies that forbid the so-called adults, you know, the grown folks, the faculty and the staff, from carrying too, upon penalty of getting fired. There's a little more complexity to it than that, of course, but that's pretty much the bottom line. Now, I'm all for higher education, folks. I just strongly disagree with this particular policy, and every state university here has it. They're all in lockstep that way. There's a guy I work with at the gun shop. We're both range safety officers. As you might expect, he has a concealed handgun permit. This range safety officer went back for his degree. Would you believe he's not allowed to carry on campus? Yeah, and if he does, he gets expelled from the university. In the words of Negro League's legend Double Duty Radcliffe, ain't that something? Well, that's what we were there to peacefully protest. Now, I emphasize peaceful here because I don't want anyone getting the wrong idea here. We peaceably open carried, as Virginia law allows us to do. And as a courtesy, we had pre-notified the campus police that we'd be doing this. Now, the antis say,
guns have no place in sensitive places like schools.
And they seem to include universities in that too, by the way. Well, I say that victim disarmament has no place anywhere, especially a college campus. Remember, just one lawfully armed student or faculty member could have stopped that Virginia Tech murderer before he killed anyone else. So, naturally, I wasn't going to miss this protest. I made sure to carry my big San Francisco liberal with a gun sign. It's a nice big sign. It's about 2 feet by 2 feet. You can't miss it. Of course, this, as you might expect, piqued quite a bit of curiosity. I got to talking with a bunch of the students there. They figured since, he's a liberal, he must be somehow safer to talk with than those other folks. Well, at least in their minds, I must have been safer to talk with. Well, naturally, I wasn't about to let that opportunity go by. I took full advantage of that. As part of the discussion, I told them the story of my dad, which you all have heard already in previous episodes. They came at me with all the Brady talking points. He even came at me with some feminist anti-man claims. I shut them all down with one simple, bottom line, quietly asked question. If my dad hadn't been carrying that day, do you, any of you, think he would have survived that encounter? And if your answer is yes, then what condition do you believe those racists with their knives would have left him in? That's the exact tone I used. you could have heard a pin drop. After a very pregnant silence, I looked around at the assemblage and asked, "Anyone?" Again, dead silence. See, everyone there knew the answer. They just didn't want to admit it in front of me. They were so emotionally invested in their position that when I utterly destroyed it, their egos wouldn't let them acknowledge that. And remember, this is at a prestigious institution of higher learning, you know, where the focus isn't not, you know, it isn't on who's right, it's on what's right. Yeah, there. And see, that's the problem with emotional investment in positions. Even when you know your position doesn't hold water, you still cling to it. Finally, one brave girl answered, "All right, no, your dad wouldn't have survived, but..." And she just kind of trailed off there. I guess she realized that there was no but to be argued when my dad would have been dead. The press was there too, by the way, covering our peaceful protest. I, along with all the rest of us, got labeled
the gun lobby
by them. I got on TV. But had a somewhat negative effect, too. Turns out some nasty things were said about me at the place where I had previously worked. Yeah, public school system. Gee, big surprise. The press members who took the video footage did so rather strategically, it turns out. It was specifically to eliminate any part of my prominent San Francisco liberal with a gun sign. You know, kind of like how MSNBC did with the black guy who brought his AR-15 slung over his back maybe 3 years ago. This was that protest against, what is now called Obamacare legislation there in 2009 there in Arizona. MSNBC used all sorts of photographic tricks and video editing and such to totally eliminate that this dude was a dark-skinned black man so they could go on talking about
white people with guns.
Y'all remember that? I hope so. I do. Well, apparently the fact that I was openly carrying did fit into the news people's image of a gun nut, but the fact that I'm a liberal doing so, apparently that part didn't fit in so well. Funny, that. So I'm part of the evil gun lobby. The way they reported on it, you'd think I was Wayne LaPierre's best buddy, his right-hand man.
Go, Wayne! Go, NRA! Go, America!
Oh, brother. Let's talk about this evil gun lobby for a moment, okay? It's said to consist of a lot of, you know, well-moneyed people who have lots of that good old Washington, D.C. influence. We're made out to be like the K Street Project or the oil companies or the big telecoms, you know, folks like that. You know, big corporate America with our
dastardly lobbying special interest super cow powers.
Trademark. Wow, that sounds pretty evil, doesn't it? When we come back, we're going to tell you what we actually are in real life. Just a heads up, it's probably not what you've heard on the quote-unquote news. Stay tuned.
Gun Rights Radio Network, podcasting freedom.
Ah, Mark, how are you, friend?
Hey, Doc Weston, how are you doing?
You're listening to the Barstool Discussion.
Welcome to Gunsmithing Radio with your host, Fred Zeglin.
You're listening to the Gun Review Podcast, a podcast that is made up entirely of gun reviews from the ordinary gun owner.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast.
This is Downrange Radio, and I'm your host, Michael Bain.
You are listening to the Personal Armament Podcast, Give Me Some Lumen Show. This is Rob Robidoux.
From the commander's chair of the Rolling Chicken Hammer Love Wagon Studio, it's the Road Gunner Podcast, coming at you with 80,000 pounds of concealed carry.
You're listening to Firearms Cafe. I'm your host, Tony Brown.
You're listening to the Gun Rights Advocates Podcast, and I am your host, Mark Vanderberg.
Welcome to the Practical Defense Quick Tip of the Week. I'm your host, Alex Addicks.
Live from sunny Live Oak, Florida, it's the Firearms Podcast.
Now, your host for the Politics and Guns Podcast, Paul Lathrop.
Hello and welcome to episode 306. Wow, 206
of your weekly Gun Dudes Podcast.
Hello, gunslingers.
Hello, everyone.
My name is Jim Fleming, and this is Reloading Radio.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Rimfire Podcast. My name is Ken Kowalski, and I'll be your host.
Shooting the Breeze, the formal gun podcast of WaltNPA.com. I am Walt White.
This is Doc Wesson, and in this episode of the Gun Nation.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Armed Citizen Podcast. I'm your host, Mick McCart.
Welcome to the Survival Gun Show. My name is Chip Monk, and I'm your humble correspondent.
Every show on the Gun Rights Radio Network gets support from the network in one form or another, and the network needs your support to keep bringing you these podcasts. Please consider going to www.gunrightsradio.com/donate and becoming a subscriber to the network. A subscription is only $2 a month and does things like helping pay for servers and bandwidth. From time to time, the network receives donated products it uses to give away to subscribers, and this year it has an amazing prize to be awarded to one lucky subscriber. The Masada Yube Group has donated an $800 Mag 40 class to be given away, and all you have to do to be eligible to win the drawing is to be a subscriber to the network. More details to be released soon on the drawing and other prizes. So don't wait. Head over to www.gunrightsradio.com/donate and become a subscriber now to be sure you're eligible to win this fantastic training opportunity.
We're back. And now it's time to talk about us, the evil gun lobby, lobby, lobby.
Oh, wow. In real life, we're a state-specific organization called the Virginia Citizens Defense League, or the VCDL. We have no money. We're basically a, well, not so ragtag group of volunteers who believe in freedom. Only this and nothing more. Yep, all volunteers. Our president, Mr. Philip Van Cleve, and all the executive board, they don't take any salary. That's right, not a dime. Not even one red cent. Well, heck, we members actually pay a little bit every year for the privilege. Oh, and the executive board members, they pay even more, since they're on the executive board.
Dun, 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 dun.
Because of the work that the VCDL does, though, and by the way, that executive board is what drives that work, our carrier rights here in Virginia have been gradually getting restored to, closer to like they do it in Vermont. See, Vermont doesn't require a permit to carry either concealed or openly. This is called constitutional carry, or the philosophy that the Constitution is your permit to carry. But isn't that dangerous? Wouldn't every street corner in Vermont turn into the OK Corral like Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer say would happen? You know, gunfights in every street corner. Bad news, right? Well, everything I hear about Vermont has indicated to me that it's one of the safest, if not the safest, of our 50 states to live in. Vermont's had this constitutional carry thing for a lot of years now, so we know it works. It's got a track record. Gradually, the VCDL is helping to move Virginia to that well-proven model. Now, remember, we're the evil gun lobby, according to the Bradys. We started in the mid-1990s as the Northern Virginia Citizens Defense League, or NVCDL. This was back when Virginia was still what's called a may-issue state. That may-issue thing refers to how a state deals with the right to carry a concealed firearm. Here's what may-issue means. You apply for a concealed handgun permit, also called a CCW or concealed weapon permit in other states, depending on your specific laws, and the state may decide, in its generosity, to grant your request, if the granting officials feel like it. It's totally at their whim. The legal term for this is at their discretion. Translation, they say no, unless either they know you and like you personally, I think that's what we call favoritism, by the way, or if you're part of the elite classes, like certain politicians or certain movie or music stars, a big business magnate like Donald Trump, and such as all that. So for us little people to get a permit in these may-issue states is a rare thing indeed, and it almost never happens. but they exceedingly occasionally throw us little people a bone here and there by actually granting one to the member of the masses. Ooh. The black Americans have a saying for that kind of mindset. My dad taught me when I was a kid. It goes, "Ooh, that's mighty white of you, sir. Thank you. Ooh, I's a special Negro now." Yeah, that's about how the officials view us, too, replacing Negro with mere citizen. That's how California, New York, Maryland, Illinois, and New Jersey view their citizens, because that's how they do the things there. By the way, Chicago, in Illinois, totally forbids any sort of firearms carry. Wow, sure has stopped crime in those places, hasn't it? Oh, well, wait. That's right, it didn't, did it? Well, fortunately, the initial members of this Northern Virginia Citizens Defense League decided, no, that's a form of tyranny. Not good. We're going to do something about that. And do something they did. They raised all sorts of legislative ruckus in the state capitol. That's Richmond, by the way, for those of you who don't live in this area. The year after they were formed, Virginia went from a may-issue state to what's called a shall-issue state. Now, here's what shall-issue means. You submit your background check and your application, and if you pass it, let me correct that. You don't submit your background check, you submit your application and they do a background check. Sorry about that. If you pass the background check, you automatically get your permit. But hold up a sec, though. What happens if some bureaucrats with, Brady-like agendas start dragging their feet indefinitely on the background checks? That's why the new Virginia law also contained a little provision that said, if 45 days go by without issuing a permit for any reason, then the permit will be automatically issued. That any reason part, that includes the background check, too. So these bureaucrats have a strong incentive now to actually complete those checks in a timely fashion. But wait, what if this happens? Suppose this happens. The background check's delayed for some reason. The permit's issued. But after the permit gets issued, the background check comes back saying ineligible. And for example, someone with a felony. Well, that's covered, too. The permit's immediately invalidated, and furthermore, the state of Virginia can and will come and pull that person's physical permit, too, then and there. Oh, and you better submit it when the police show up, or otherwise you'll find yourself with a stay in the Iron Bar Motel, otherwise known as jail. So they thought this out pretty well when they implemented it. This shall-issue business has been the law in Virginia since the late 90s, I think 97 or 98, something like that. It was long before I ever came out here, that's for sure. The Bradys and their allies were screaming, "The streets will become rivers of blood!" Wow, sounds pretty serious, rivers of blood and all. But that didn't happen. Here's what happened. Crime started taking a nosedive. Criminals figured out that Virginians just might be walking heavy, and guess what? Some of those criminals indeed actually did get shot as Virginians defended themselves from violent attack. What a concept. Kind of like, that 12-year-old, what's her name? Kendra St. Clair? Yeah, that's it, of Oklahoma. I'm sure you saw her on the news recently. She used her mom's pistol at her mom's direction, by the way, to defend herself from a home invasion. This happened, maybe a couple weeks ago. 12-year-old Kendra was home alone. Heard an intruder pounding on the front door. Smart girl, she did not answer the door, did not open the door. But then she heard glass shattering. What'd she do? She immediately called her mom, who told her,
"I said, Kendra, get the gun and go get in my closet now and call 911.
Kendra did just that, hiding out in her mom's closet. 911 on the phone with her. When this home invader turned the handle to enter her mom's closet, this is where the girl was hiding, the girl pulled the trigger and got him. The invader, one Mr. Stacy Jones, now with a bullet in him, then tried to flee the scene. He's out of the hospital now, and by the way, under arrest. He's charged with first-degree burglary. This dude's lucky to be alive, folks. And I think we all can guess what would have happened to that girl if she hadn't had that gun. I've already told you all about my dad and how he's defended himself from racists who didn't think he had the right to exist. Well, thanks to this shall issue thing we've going on here in Virginia, Virginians all of a sudden got the right to defend themselves, too. And crime went down. Wow, funny that. The dot-com days are long since over, of course. Matter of fact, the economy is currently in the toilet. But crimes generally stayed down throughout the state. This, obviously, is a very good thing. We like it when crime goes down, right? So I ask my fellow liberals who may be listening, could you really look in my dad's face? Oh, heck, for that matter, 12-year-old Kendra's face, and tell either one of them how the right to defend yourself could possibly be a bad thing? Do you really think you could do that? Look them in the eye and say that. This is what we, the so-called evil gun lobby, continue to work to preserve. All of us who are shooters are part of it. That includes me, you, my dad, my neighbors, Kendra, oh, and her mother who taught her, all of us in the Virginia Citizens Defense League and our sister organizations like CalGuns out in California, the Second Amendment Foundation, Mr. Richard and Mrs. Jane Heller of the famous case D.C. versus Heller, Attorney Alan Gura, who argued the case, and everyone else who believes in the right to keep and bear arms. It includes all of us. It includes Mrs. Layla Myers. She's an immigrant that I met from the Azerbaijan Soviet Socialist Republic. This is back when it was still a Soviet Socialist Republic. She somehow managed to escape the Soviet Union in one piece. This was back when families were being taken off in the night by the cops. She told us about that. Folks, she grew up in a police state. Didn't know if she'd make it out alive. Now, today, this former Soviet citizen, who, oh, is now a proud American citizen, by the way, lives here, and she has become a part of this evil gun lobby, too, because she knows it's the right thing to do. She was born and raised in the alternative. She knows. So, the next time someone ridicules this
evil gun lobby,
if you're a gun owner, remind them that you're part of it, too. The Bradys and their allies want to paint it as the leadership of the NRA, but that's not what it is. It's you and me, everyday folks like us. We'll take another short break for station ID. Be right back.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership, gunrightsradio.com.
Okay, we're back. Remember last episode when I said, oh, sometimes you just got to admit you made a mistake and apologize? Remember how I used Steve Harvey, who supports President Obama, as an example of that? Well, we believe in consistency here at the Liberals Gun Corner, and you're about to see an example of that. A couple years ago, I called into a local Talking Heads radio show. A conservative Talking Heads radio show. Yeah, I know what you're thinking. This will not end well. This particular Talking Head fellow is definitely in the Republican lobbying camp. He's a local. He tries to be kind of like Rush Limbaugh meets Sean Hannity. He's looking for syndication and such. He was talking about something Newt Gingrich had said about how we should get this. Start actually discriminating. Yeah, discriminating. He used the word against Muslim men at airports. I kept the recording from that call. And we're going to dissect this ridiculous way of thinking piece by piece. Y'all ready? Good, so am I. Let's get to it.
Here's an American guy born and raised, Major Nidal Hassan. He's a Muslim and he's got a name that is now a terrorist name, a jihadi name, because of him. And he's an American-born Muslim. The overwhelmingly, the vast majority of American-born Muslims are not going to go on massive jihadi killing sprees. That said, if my name is Nidal Hassan and I'm an American-born Muslim raised in Virginia and I'm waiting in line at an airport, I've got to say I think that it's going to be pretty obvious that I'm going to get pulled over and I'm going to be subjected to another level of scrutiny. And if I've got a problem with that, then maybe I should start a peace movement. You know, maybe I should become famous for opposing violence in the name of Islam. Maybe I should do something about it. But the reality that we face right now, and this is, I've made the comparison before, it's kind of like when you're at war with Japan. When Japan bombs you and declares war on you, it's okay to single out Japanese people for different treatment. When Germany declares war on you, because their ally Japan declared war on you, then it's time to start paying more attention to Germans. And in this case, what we have is a war being waged by an identifiable group of people, overwhelmingly male, entirely Muslim, radicals who are committing massive war crimes against the West whenever the opportunity presents itself.
Ah, so if you're Muslim and male, then you got to somehow redeem yourself extra. I wonder if this guy, a white guy, did that after Timothy McVeigh's act of terrorism. Somehow I doubt it. Let's continue.
We are doing so much wrong at this point. And this goes to the Bush administration. I complained about it then, too. But we're even more wrong-headed about it now with the new administration because of political correctness and their dyed-in-the-wool dogma, which dictates that if one Muslim is going to be inconvenienced, that all human beings must be inconvenienced in precisely the same way. Otherwise, we would be discriminating. Well, I've got to agree with Newt Gingrich that it's time to be discriminating. It's time to discriminate because it's obvious, because it would be idiotic not to. And if you're a Muslim, and look, I may be singled out because I'm a dark-haired male, more or less, in that age frame, and I get pulled over all the time at the airport. And I shake my head a little bit. So what? That's the world we live in. But if I am a Muslim man, and my name is Nidal Hassan, and I'm in line at the airport, I should also expect more scrutiny because there are a lot of guys with names like Nidal Hassan that have been blowing people up over the course of the last couple of decades, and some of us have actually noticed it.
Oh, should we? Is that a fact? Okay, let's do that. Since whites are the ones pulling over folks for something called DWB, or driving while black or brown, but they're not doing this to fellow whites, there's clearly a pattern going on here. Yeah, you know, maybe this guy's got a point. Maybe we should discriminate against white people. Because you never know, folks. One of those whites might be an off-duty cop who's going to pull my dad over and harass him for DWB. How about it, folks? Should we have a Speaker of the House, Mr. Boehner, introduce a bill? The fact that this talking head is even suggesting this as a serious question is a blight on American society. It's a shame that there are enough people who share his mindset that he can make money off of spewing this sort of garbage. Let's continue.
And this is, of course, trickier. I mean, it's not, it's not as though every Muslim is looking to blow up your airplane. Obviously not true. It's just that everybody looking to blow up your airplane is a Muslim.
Now, that's interesting, because the Sikhs, you know those folks from India, have been wearing turbans for how many centuries? They've been getting beaten up, even shot and killed for a quote-unquote looking Muslim. And this has been going on ever since September 11th, 2001. Now, of course, not every white conservative wants to beat up or shoot Sikhs. No. But it does seem that everyone beating up or shooting Sikhs is a white conservative. Should we therefore apply the same thing to white conservatives as this talking head wants to apply to Muslim men? As Arsenio Hall would say, something to make you go, here's where I call in to call him on all this nonsense. Now it gets fun.
Terrell, it's Terrell, right?
It's Terrell, actually.
Terrell, sorry.
Since on the other syllable.
Yeah, all right, gotcha.
How are you, Chris?
I'm good.
All right. Well, I got a question for you. You used the example of the Japanese and World War II a couple of times here, at least during your show.
Uh-huh.
And we all know the history of that, of course. You know, anybody who was, you know, who looked Japanese, basically, we could find them. We rounded them up, regardless if they were, you know, warriors for Japan or whether or not they were, you know, law-abiding American citizens, loyal as you and I are.
Right.
Rounded them up. Got to protect the country, right?
Yep.
So why didn't we do that to the white Germans, too?
It's a perfectly fair question.
Yeah. Do you have an answer?
No, I'll have to ask FDR about that.
Okay, notice that long pause in there? Those of you who worked in radio know that 3 seconds of silence is an eternity in radio. That was more like 4 seconds. He let all that dead time go by. See, he didn't expect me to nail him with that. He got caught, see? He doesn't know how to answer. And that pause, that's where he's trying to figure out how to recover and somehow counter. So now he knows I'm not in his camp. I'm now in, I guess, in his enemy box. Let's see how he recovers here.
You know, but I don't have a perfect answer for you on that. But I'll tell you that when we, you know, first of all, there was the Nazis were known for their fifth columnists as well. The Japanese had a fifth column that was called the Black Dragon. It was an ultra-nationalist organization that had been committing acts of sabotage throughout, well, the empire that they were expanding into, including Latin America, by the way, where the Black Dragon was very active. There was also evidence at the time that the Black Dragon was active or about to become active in the aftermath of December 7th, the aftermath of Pearl Harbor inside the United States. In fact, at Manzanar and at some of the other camps, there was a good deal of Black Dragon activity and Black Dragon graffiti and Black Dragon this and Black Dragon that. So they did have a fifth column that was in the United States.
Wow, that's an interesting way to quote-unquote recover. Well, what? So what? Does that mean that everyone who looked Japanese needed to be rounded up just because they might be part of this Black Dragon? Okay, how about we do this? We round up all those who look white because they might be members of the KKK. Ah, gee, you know, that sucks. My mom was really enjoying that house on the beach.
That said, that's not really what we're facing now. That you could argue, and I think you are arguing, that was obviously an overreaction in the context of the time. Nobody's suggesting anything of the kind now, though, are they?
Actually, I do believe it. It is a discriminatory overreaction because we're doing now to quote unquote Muslims exactly what we did to the Japanese.
Are we now? Oh, so we've interned all Muslims in the United States?
Okay, close.
Oh, close. So we've come close to interning all the Muslims in the United States.
It looks like we're on our way, slowly.
How close?
It really does.
Is that right?
Chris, now,
what
you're advocating here, Chris,
yeah,
is giving special extra scrutiny and fairly serious scrutiny to those who, you know, are Muslim, basically. Just like, you know, in much of a similar mentality fashion that we did with those who look yellow and slant eyes and say, oh, I'm Japanese American, but we didn't do it to the white Germans.
Well, yeah, that's a great paradox.
Also,
I'd have
the same exact thing to, you know, white guys, black guys, Cucamongan guys, everybody else.
I got to say, I mean, I think that you've detached yourself from reality in a couple of different ways.
Okay, he goes for some semantic wording technicalities to try to discredit me, and instead of actually addressing the actual discrimination issue. You know, no, he can't actually do that because, of course, he knows he can't. Then he claims I'm, what, quote-unquote, detached from reality. Okay, apparently since I'm in his enemies category now, ad hominem attacks are apparently considered fair game to him. Yeah, real classy there. Way to get me to go for your side there, buddy. Let's continue.
Now, during World War II, you know, you can argue the merits of Roosevelt's decision all day long and the dichotomy between the treatment of the Germans and the treatment of the Japanese. But right now, in 2010, what we have is a definable enemy. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, it's people who believe that, oh, hey, you look like this, you have this religion, okay, extra scrutiny, bang.
Well, no, the enemy is me.
In that way, yeah.
I'm the problem.
In some ways, yes, you are.
All right, I am. Okay. And am I blowing up airplanes? Am I decapitating journalists? Am I waging jihad? Am I looking to spread a talk radio caliphate around the world? Have I vowed to raise an army to destroy you and your people? Obviously, those are rhetorical questions because the answers to all of them would be no. But let me, again, this is... just extraordinary to me, because your worldview leaves us defenseless.
Defenseless? Against what? Muslims? Wow. I wonder if that includes Army Corporal Karim Rashid Sultan Khan, who lost his life defending this country in Iraq and is now buried in Arlington National Cemetery. I guess he's the enemy too, huh? You know, died in combat. After all, he was a Muslim man. Well, same with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the basketball great. He's a Muslim man too. Well, so what? I guess he's also the enemy? I've brought up the late Corporal Khan to folks just like this talking head before. Invariably, there is one of two reactions. Either A, they don't know what to say and they shut up, which is probably the better move, or B, they get extremely upset and start with personal attacks. That's how you know you caught someone. They start doing personal attacks because they got nothing left. We'll see more of that later here in just a moment.
Now, during the war with Japan, it would be fair to say that the Japanese were at war with us, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, and with Germany and all of that good stuff.
And Italy.
And Italy, and they didn't really put up much of a fight. They're in very serious wars, haven't been in a couple thousand years, but never mind that. But right now, you understand that radical Islamists are waging a war against us.
Radical Islamists are waging a war against anyone who's not like them.
That's
much
right.
Like the Chinese government is waging a war against anyone who wants freedom.
Well, sure, that's well, the left everywhere does that, and you know, Burma, any place the left remains, that's what they do. But you know, North Korea. But right now, what we're talking about, rather than just changing the subject all over the place every time I ask a question, is radical Islamists are waging war against, and you're right, against everybody who's not just like them. That would include us.
Problem is,
it's kind of a yes or no question.
Yet it's the same exact subject.
But once again, you can't answer a question. The question is, are they waging a war against us?
Oh yeah, of course.
Okay, all right, well, good. It only took 14 questions to get that. All right, and therefore, we should pay special attention to the people that are waging war against us.
If you're going to include everybody that's waging special war against us, then yes, I agree with you.
What is special war?
Okay, well,
we're introducing new terminology that has nothing to do with reality.
I thought I heard you use the word special.
Special war? I don't think I did. No.
Okay,
everybody takes little buses to the front? What is that? I don't know.
Okay, then I misheard you.
All right, okay, so they're waging war against us.
They're waging war against us.
Yeah, okay, but we shouldn't single them out for special scrutiny.
Special scrutiny, okay, yeah.
Okay, now he's getting snitty, claiming I'm changing the subject all around the place every time I ask a question, when it's not what he wants to try to funnel me into and I don't let him. Or, you know, it took 14 questions to get that, and so on, you know, etc. Wow, you know, either be right or be rude, apparently. At this point, he clearly views me as an enemy to be attacked. And notice here, he tries yet more ridicule when I'd apparently misheard him. Yeah, that's making a cogent case.
If we're going to single them out for special scrutiny, we should single everybody else out for special scrutiny that's also waging any kind of hostility against us, to include anybody who's Korean. After all, they look like North Koreans, don't they? If we're going to go there.
I got to tell you, Terrell, that's crazy. That's insane. That's lunacy. That's deconstructive faculty lounge suicidal silliness. It is laughable on the face of it. The North Koreans haven't been blowing up airliners, trains in Spain and London. They haven't been decapitating people. They're not waging a global jihad. You know, the North Korean problem is separate and distinct from the radical Islam problem in virtually every possible way. And your attempt to link the two of them is merely an attempt to muddy the waters, and Al-Qaeda thanks you for it.
Apparently he thinks that's off-topic somehow, even though he had himself mentioned North Korea earlier. I guess it's only off-topic when someone other than he brings it up. Oh, and now he goes to the personal attacks against me. Here we go!
I can promise you this. Radical Islamists love Americans like you, Terrell, because you are doing their work for them. You are paving the way for the next smoking hole in the ground filled with dead Americans. Because this nonsensical, irrelevant faculty lounge argument, and I'm making quotation marks around the word argument because it's not an argument. It's just, it's disassociative, free association of thoughts that is so completely without focus that it's utterly invalid. Other than that, it's a pretty good argument. No, the reality is that when Japan is waging war against you, and we're not close to interning anybody, Terrell, I know you hate this country, and we're really the bad guy in all of this, and our historical sins must be revisited in every discussion on every day. But right now, there are radical Islamists who want to incinerate your mother, all right? They want to incinerate your children if you have children. That is their goal. They would gargle in the blood of the innocent, and you are searching for ways to free associate right out of the discussion into something about how terrible America is. This is why the left cannot be entrusted with the national security of the United States of America. Just one more example. I thank you for calling in with it.
And now I apparently hate this country. Wow. No, folks, I'm not the one who hates this country. He is. You have just heard, in his own words, how much he and those who think like him hate the very premise of America. I guess that little thing that's carved into the Statue of Liberty, that's that thing that says, give me your tired, your poor, you're hungry, and so on, doesn't apply in their minds. Oh, well. Well, anyway, remember when we talked earlier about egos and emotional investment in a wrong-headed position? Well, the level of bigotry you've just heard is so near and dear to their hearts that those who believe this nonsense, they just cannot see how wrong their vision is. They don't want to. Oh, and did you also notice his hatred of academia? I'm not surprised to see that put-down attitude toward higher education from someone like that. I hear from plenty of other like-minded thinkers at gun shows all the time. Folks, his job and others like him, Limbaugh, Hannity, Don Imus, Bill O'Reilly, Ann Coulter, all the rest of them, and I want you to understand this. Their job isn't to foster actual discussion. It's to whip up the white hoods, the Confederacy lovers, the skinheads, the Aryan Nation types, all those who are scared to death of anyone not just like them, at least in power. That would be white, Christian, so they claim, and socially conservative. Unfortunately, there are enough non-thinking folks out there who follow talking heads like them, and especially when times start getting a little, you know, tougher like these days. Now, it occurred to me as I was putting this episode together, what if every American of Japanese descent had been armed back then? Yeah, I wonder if as many of them would have been thrown in those internment camps. You've heard me criticize today's Democrats for being anti-freedom with regard to the Second Amendment. Well, now it's the Republicans' turn. If the Republican chicken hawks had their way, every man here who happens to be Muslim would be rounded up and sent to the middle of Saudi Arabia or Pakistan. I guess they just don't care that basketball legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and boxing legend Muhammad Ali are also Muslim men. I guess they don't care about, now, that Corporal Kareem Rashid Sultan Khan, who earlier I mentioned, died for this country? Doesn't matter. Just round them all up. Let, quote-unquote, God sort them out. I'm noticing something else, too, here. I'm seeing a lot more Muslim families going to gun shows recently and making purchases. Oh, and especially Arabic-looking Muslims. I'm seeing more of them at the range, too. After what you've just heard, it shouldn't be a surprise as to why. See, they don't want to end up like the Japanese Americans did either. They don't want to be vigilante lynched like too many black Americans were back in the day. I can't say I blame them for arming up. This whole mindset that we just saw here, it was so disgusting to me that I just had to take it apart. And apparently, I'm not the only one who doesn't buy it. In 2008, former Secretary of State Colin Powell himself had this to say about that bigoted mindset.
I'm also troubled by not what Senator McCain says, but what members of the party say. And it is permitted to be said such things as, well, you know that Mr. Obama is a Muslim. Well, the correct answer is he is not a Muslim. He's a Christian. He's always been a Christian. But the really right answer is, what if he is? Is there something wrong with being a Muslim in this country? The answer is no, that's not America. Is there something wrong with some 7-year-old Muslim American kid believing that he or she could be president? Yet I have heard senior members of my own party drop this suggestion. He's a Muslim and he might be associated with terrorists. This is not the way we should be doing it in America. I feel strongly about this particular point because of a picture I saw in a magazine. It was a photo essay about troops who were serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. And one picture at the tail end of this photo essay was of a mother in Arlington Cemetery. And she had her head on the headstone of her son's grave. And as the picture focused in, you could see the writing on the headstone. And it gave his awards, Purple Heart, Bronze Star, showed that he died in Iraq, gave his date of birth, date of death. He was 20 years old. And then at the very top of the headstone, it didn't have a Christian cross. It didn't have a Star of David. It had a crescent and a star of the Islamic faith. And his name was Karim Rashad Sultan Khan. And he was an American. He was born in New Jersey. He was 14 years old at the time of 9/11. And he waited until he can go serve his country, and he gave his life. Now, we have got to stop polarizing ourselves in this way.
Well said, Secretary Powell. And you are, of course, right. The America I signed up to defend welcomes everybody, and that's exactly as it should remain. That's how I grew up in San Francisco, with all sorts of types of folks around me. You name it, we had them. And experience has shown me time and again that I'm better off for that. This is Cowboy T signing off. Until next time. Until then, safe shooting. Thanks for listening. And regardless of your political bent, I sure hope you voted.